You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. I'm joined in the studio by Lucy Jones, journalist and author of Foxes Unearthed, which, Lucy, Foxes Unearthed is actually a book quite literally about foxes.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of about why we love and hate foxes in this country. I kind of have a mixed beat. I'm a culture journalist and a nature and science journalist too. So I kind of go between both.
Fascinating. Well, of course, as my accent probably hints at, I'm Australians and we tend to have a very different relationship with foxes, but we best not get into that just now. Welcome to the show, Lucy. Today we are going to be discussing the new Baz Luhrmann extravaganza for Netflix, the second season of Mr. Robot as well, and also Horace and Pete. But we'll start with that Baz Luhrmann extravaganza, as everyone has been calling it. It's also known as The Get Down. It's the new production by the Australian director, which is described as a mythic saga of how New York, at the brink of bankruptcy, gave birth to hip-hop, punk, and disco. Let's hear a clip.
The pale-faced media tells us we're all going to hell. But maybe we're just the first ones to light the fire. Some try to snuff it out. But that's like oxygen to a flame.
What's the get down? You don't know what the fucking get down is?
Okay, well, lots of music going on in that clip. And as those characters hinted at, what is The Get Down? I don't actually know what exactly it is. Lucy, elaborate. What can we expect from this new, as we said, extravaganza from Baz Luhrmann?
Extravaganza is definitely the right word. It's a series set in New York in 1977, and it's about the rise of hip-hop in the last days of disco. And the story is told kind of through kind of a love story between a young couple, one of whom is trying to make it as a disco singer, and the other is trying to make it as a wordsmith, and it looks like he's going to become a kind of hip-hop star, although hip-hop is in its beginning stages. And it is very entertaining. Baz Luhrmann, as you said, is one of the directors, and because of that, it is very bombastic. It can be quite corny and cheesy at times too.
I think you've just described Baz Luhrmann's entire career.
Yeah, so I mean, I like Baz Luhrmann, and I'm a sucker for musicals, so I love the music side of the show. It also has quite an interesting team behind it. So Nas is an executive producer, and Grandmaster Flash, who is obviously instrumental in creating hip hop, is an associate producer as well.
So they've added plenty of credentials to the background here. And do you think that allows it to have a little bit more fun with how it tackles the subject, with the knowledge knowing that we've got some people here who really know what they're talking about?
I think it certainly lends it a legitimacy and a credibility. I mean, it's by no means perfect. There's not a lot of nuance going on. You know, it's very cheesy, but it's a wonderful story about a really interesting transition in the music world. I'm a music journalist, kind of originally, so I love all the
music. So this is right up
your
street, then.
It is, yeah. And I mean, the pilot was really long. I think it was an hour and a half, and at times it was, I think, a bit flaccid. But it's definitely hotting up, and there have been some brilliant musical numbers. The female character, the lead particularly, has an incredible voice, and she's really enjoyable to watch. But I think it's an obvious successor to Vinyl and Empire as well. I didn't really like Vinyl very much.
A lot of people had problems with that, didn't they?
Yeah, heavy, yeah. And rockist. I loved Empire, but this seems to be, I mean, it's got the classic Baz Luhrmann beautiful cinematography and aesthetic, and you know, lots of interesting tropes. Like every episode starts with one of the trains coming by with the name of the episode and graffiti on the side of the train, and it's an entertaining. It's a classic August blockbuster watch. You know, it's full of heart and soul and emotion. It reminds me a bit of Moulin Rouge. You know, there's lots of kind of snogs on rooftops and, you know, kind of moments like that. And
long, wistful camera moves.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you like musicals, you'll love it. And I love musicals, I'm ashamed to say. But, you know, there's lots of musical numbers, so.
Well, there we go. I think plenty to look forward to there. We'll have to, the jury's still out on whether it can withstand a few more episodes than three, though. That is The Get Down, which premiered on the 12th of August on Netflix. You can catch up with that on Netflix right now. Let's move along and talk about the second season of Mr. Robot now from Amazon Studios. Let's hear a clip first.
Remember the night of the hack? Remember what happened to you?
All I remember is I woke up 3 days later.
And what happened in those 3 days?
There hasn't been anything like this in the past. This is going to be affecting our economy in ways that are extraordinarily significant. The FBI announced today that Tyrell Welling and F Society engaged in this attack.
Now a changing of the guard has begun.
People everywhere came to support us. And right now, they need to know we haven't given up, that we meant what we said about changing.
A clip there from Mr. Robot. Now, obviously, Lucy, that has been on for a little while now. We're into season two, and it sounded as though we were hearing a bit of a clip there from President Barack Obama. So there are efforts here to bring us into the real world with Mr. Robot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's quite loosely kind of based on the anonymous hacker movement. But this series is really different from series one. I was absolutely obsessed with series one. I couldn't wait for series two to come out, and I'm about 4 to 5 episodes in. And it's really, really different. So you've got the central character who is coping with his mental health issues and the fallout of what his hacker group, F Society, has done, the impact of what they've done to Evil Corp, who are kind of the big corporate conglomerate. And Sam Esmail, who's the creator of the series, is not giving us any easy answers. He's making us work pretty hard. Elliot, who's his kind of activity is always on computers, and that's what makes him quite exciting to watch. He doesn't even touch a computer for the first 4 episodes. He's basically writing a diary. He's living with his mom. He, as you heard in the clip, has kind of blacked out for 3 days. We're not really sure what's going on. So it's quite a slow start, but then suddenly a kind of episode 4, I think it is, it kind of lurches into gear, and we leave Elliot trying to hack the FBI at the end of the episode. And it's a really interesting show at the moment.
Does that sort of structure work for you? Because I know sometimes a television series can often suffer from feeling like they need to cram everything into the pilot episode and ensure that they hook people very early on, which can sometimes actually have the opposite effect. You come away thinking, well, there was a lot going on there, but I don't really know anything about the people I'm watching. In this case, you mentioned that you weren't really hooked until episode 4, and then you really felt that you'd strapped yourself in and there was no getting out. Do you find that that works a little bit better now that we're in the new age of, I mean, a lot of the time we watch television series multiple episodes at once?
I mean, for me, it really depends on a mixture of things. Firstly, the writing. Like, I know that the writing of this series is really good, and I trust that Sam Esmail, who I was so impressed with series one, was going to pull it out the bag with series two. Also, the world he has created is very unique. You know, there's very kind of dark, shadowy cinematography, impeccable soundtrack. You know, the last episode I watched kind of lurched from Holst to the Chromatics, and you know, there's such strength there in the world he's created, the writing and the characters, that even though to be honest, for the first few episodes I didn't have a clue what was going on, you know, I trust that it's going to get better. And I think with Mr. Robot, I quite like the fact that, you know, they're releasing episodes every week. It's not all in one kind of big dump. And as someone who feels a lot of pressure to like watch shows all the time and kind of get them finished, I'm quite liking that. I'm liking it being eked out week after week.
You enjoy
old
being
school way.
That would drive me nuts, I have to say. I'm a sucker for the House of Cards sort of sitting down, watching as many episodes as you can fit into a day, and then suddenly realizing it's 3 a.m. and I have to be up at 6. Terrible realization that always is. Now, so then when we're talking about the reality behind the series, then I know we just talked briefly about how we heard a clip of Barack Obama in that, and yes, this is very much set in the real world and based very loosely on real events as well. I know some people who have watched this who are very tech savvy and have seen some of the hacking taking place and some of the actual IT appearing on the screen, and they've said that that is actually quite realistic. It's not like the usual, you know, you can sit down and watch an episode of 24 and when they're hacking something, see a big red message saying hacked, 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 really no ambiguity whatsoever. Is that important to you, that realistic portrayal, making you feel as though this could actually happen?
Certainly. I mean, I must say, I don't know a lot about hacking, but it definitely feels authentic. And the way Elliot kind of hacks, I mean, from what I can tell with my reading around Sam Esmail as well. He's obviously done a lot of research. I mean, the feeling of Mr. Robot, though, even though it is obviously loosely based on some current events, it's very surreal as well. And partly that's because, you know, we spend a lot of time in Elliot's head and, you know, he's dealing with various mental health issues. We know now in this series who Mr. Robot is. I won't say, just in case any of your listeners haven't watched the end of series one. You know, so combined with this kind of authentic portrayal of the hackery movement is a very kind of unclear world of Elliot's internal monologue, which is very compelling as well.
And just looking at the cast list, it's interesting to note that there are no massive stars here. I mean, we're used to maybe the model that I mentioned, House of Cards. Obviously, some very big established stars were helming that from the beginning. The only very well-known name here, to at least some people, would be Kristen Slater.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's quite a testament to the quality of the production itself, then, one might imagine.
Exactly. And it's not like Kristen Slater is the main part. You know, he's not the one who's given all the airtime. And Rami Malek, the guy who plays Elliot, is really fantastic and also has great other supporting characters, like his sister Darlene. The actress who plays that is fantastic too. I mean, it's not a vehicle, I don't think, for kind of big celebrities. It's much more arty and kind of indie rather than that.
Well, the second season of Mr. Robot is out now on USA Network every Wednesday. And we'll move along now to Horace and Pete, which is available from louisck.net. And before we get into that, we'll hear a quick clip.
So what the hell's wrong with you anyway?
Pete, he has a mental condition.
I have breast cancer.
Hey, come here.
No, I'm okay.
I'm a friend of your nephew, Pete.
Look at this broad who's coming here asking for you. She looks nice.
I knew her at the hospital. We were in the same, I knew her at the hospital.
Listen to me. This is love. Love is when you hold a woman up close to you, like this. And you look her in the face, eye to eye, and you're holding on tight, and you love her. I'm gonna hit night deposit and then go home.
So that's a clip there from Horace and Pete, which is the television series that was created by Louis C.K. It stars himself and Steve Buscemi as Horace and Pete, who are co-owners of an Irish bar, which of course is called Horace and Pete's. Now, Lucy, explain to me the premise for this, because I know season one attracted quite a bit of attention because it actually wasn't on any of the major streaming platforms or any of the major networks either.
Exactly. I think it was an idea that Louis C.K. had to kind of innovate and basically see if he could open source a series. So it appeared earlier this year with no fanfare, no press, nothing. Louis fans just got an email into their account and they said, you know, it said here, there's a web series, you can pay a few dollars for each episode. But what's really unique and I think genius about this show is that it's basically a filmed play. So when you watch it, you feel like you're at the theatre. There's not a lot of music, it's multi-camera work, there are long monologues, you know, which will go on for 20 minutes or so, and the episodes range in length. So one of them I watched the other day was like 70 minutes long, another one's like 40 minutes long. It was based loosely, I think, on a filmed play by Mike Leigh called Abigail's Party, which was from the 70s. I missed it. But I think Louis was really trying to concentrate on that kind of naturalistic, realistic vibe. And I think it really works. I mean, you would have heard in the clip we just listened to, it's quite moving. It's not your classic Louis C.K. laughs. It's more of a tragicomedy, but there's definitely amusing moments. And yeah, it's incredibly moving. I was watching an episode last night where Laurie Metcalf is a guest actress on it. She was actually nominated for an Emmy for this episode, and she delivers this monologue at the beginning for 25 minutes or so, and I actually found myself welling up at one point, which you don't really expect with a Louis C.K. show, but it's a brilliant portrayal of people, you know, in all their rawness and ugliness and cruelty and love, and I think it's just beautifully well written, and I think it's my favourite out of the three that we're talking about today.
Well, it does not surprise me that Laurie Metcalf could make gold out of whatever she was given, of course famously portraying the sister Jackie from Roseanne. I think it's so fascinating you mentioned that it feels a little bit like a play when you're watching it. Does that sort of lend itself maybe to a degree of intimacy that we don't often get from television?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's very stripped down. Like I said, there's no music, I think at the end of the actual show completely. I think Louis C.K. says something like, "That's a wrap, Horace and Pete's is over," and everyone claps. I mean, he's obviously brought in his kind of friends as supporting actresses and actors, people like Edie Falco, who's amazing in it, and Jessica Lange. And you'll have kind of half an hour of Horace and Pete chatting. So that's Louis and Steve Buscemi about kind of Steve's mental illness or having a little argument. And it feels very intimate. I mean, typically Louis, he doesn't shy away from taboo subjects. There's lots of interesting topics that come up, like kind of menopausal female sexuality and kind of transgender politics, conservatism versus liberalism. And a criticism could be it's a little self-indulgent. You know, you will listen to a conversation about politics for half an hour and it's quite slow sometimes. But the writing is so exquisite and clever and funny and tragic that I think it just works perfectly. And I hope there'll be another series. He says that there won't be because I think it costs $500,000 per episode. And I get the impression he didn't make the money back and he kind of had to go out and promote it more. So I'm not sure there'll be a second episode, but it's a little bit under the radar. You know, people don't really know about it, but it's beautiful. I hope it will engender more TV that's a bit more like theatre as well.
Perhaps it won't ignite the business model that it was relying upon, but it sounds as though it has really struck a chord with a lot of people. I mean, you know, Laurie Metcalf and Jessica Lange in a bar together, you really can't beat that,
yeah,
can you?
Exactly.
Well, that's all we've got time for on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Thanks to my guest, Lucy Jones. You have been listening to the Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan, and my producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking books. But for now, thanks very much and goodbye.